This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, once again, welcome to another edition of Thursday Coast. God bless you and good morning. It's morning. Well, actually, still morning here on the East Coast. It's not noon yet. We're a little early today, and we know it's early in the morning on the West Coast, where Marcos is back home, founder of the largest online progressive community. We had to get together this week to talk about what happened Tuesday and how significant it is. So, and we welcome your comments in the chat, if on all the chats, if you are watching us streaming live. Hey, man, how are you? Big Tuesday.
It was an ass whooping. Republicans got mauled. We were saying it was going to be a good day for Democrats just because Trump's polling is bad and the economy is heading south, and he's more fixated on his ballroom than he is on, you know, the things that people thought they were voting for when they voted for him. But I didn't think it was going to be this good, Mark. I did not think it was going to be as dramatic as it actually was.
No, it was definitely a big night, and we thought it might be a little closer in Virginia and New Jersey, but it wasn't actually. I'll put one thesis out here, and I'm going to hand it over to you because I know you got a lot of analysis. You know, we talk about. I was on another show earlier this week. You weren't on with me, but a caller called to complain that the Democratic Party's tent is too big, and that's why we can't get anything done. Too many different constituencies, and there's not a lot of harmony. We have always considered that a good problem to have. We just had to figure it out. I think we saw that Tuesday. You can have a more diverse group of personalities than a Spanberger, Mikey Sherrill, and a Zoran Mamdani.
Yep.
That's all us. Mm-hmm. Now we just got to figure out how we still work together. We can't be that different with each other. If all those different groups, Abigail and Mikey, two totally different candidates and types of people than Zoran, who after all disappointed his transition team, and it is 100% women. There's not a single male on his transition team. But we've got to seize that, one, two, and then I'll shut up. You know, Marcos, we talk about us. Marcos and I we've never sugarcoated our side's shortcomings. We go to sleep sometimes. Even those of us who are the most progressive and most radical, we go to sleep. We went to sleep in November last year, obviously devastation, depression. But then when we win, we have this euphoria. And then sometimes we go to sleep again. We're like, oh, we did it. And then we go to sleep. Don't we? I mean, I don't get that, y'all. For once, let's build on this. I know it feels great, but we're not done. We got to be right back at it next year in the midterms. We cannot be euphoric. We can't go on these emotional extremes. Let's deal with the, you know, Abigail and Mikey, boring, not excited. We heard all of that, but they won. Let's work with it. And everybody's not going to be a Barack Obama or Zoran Mamdani, but we ought to be able to capitalize that. So those are my main takeaways and admonitions. But we do well to hear yours.
No, that's all good. We need to stop looking at politics as like a personality contest. You're not electing your BFF. Like, this is not the person you're going to be hanging out with. Like, you need people who are competent public stewards. First of all, number one job of a politician, get elected. Number one job, get elected. And I've been writing quite a bit about how Trump did that by promising to lower prices on day one. And people are hurting economically. And nobody thinks, well, how's he going to do it? No, like, tell people what your values are. Now, Trump obviously never gave a damn about lowering prices on day one. Like, he doesn't even know what a grocery is. He thinks grocery is an old-timey term because he's never in his life bought groceries. But that's not taking away from the fact that his number one job was to get elected. Right. And you got to be attuned. And that's what Mehmet Dani did really well, is that's how he went from 0% to being mayor of New York City, is by really understanding what people really feel a need. And then the second job is to get reelected, right? And that's going to be a challenge. And I'm, you know, I got my questions about Mehmet Dani's ability to deliver, but that's going to be his next challenge, his next job. And as you mentioned, he's got a big coalition that he's going to have to keep happy. And particularly the DSA crowd, the Democratic Socialists of America, they're not known as being team players in any sense, or having any patience, or having any understanding of broader, bigger political picture, to the point that they excommunicated Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right, from AOC, from DSA, which she's literally their biggest accomplishment until Mehmet Dani, and you'd think she would be their hero. But so there is a close-mindedness on sort of that further left part of the Democratic coalition. But that doesn't speak to the fact that there was a broad-based, from the ideological perspective. And I don't get the sense, I know the media tries to harp on Mehmet Dani is a socialist and Spanberger and Sherrill. And I don't really get a sense from rank and file Democrats that they are even tuned into that or they care about that. And people who are, the media is obsessed with it. Trump obviously is going to be obsessed with it. You know, Republicans think they're going to turn Mehmet Dani into a boogeyman. They're not. Nobody cares about the New York City mayor outside of New York City. I don't think they're going to get any traction on the midterms about that. But what it shows is that what we saw, Tuesday. What we saw Tuesday is that the economic message is what people are looking for. It's what got Donald Trump elected. It's what got Mehmet Dani elected. It's what got Sherrill and Spanberger elected, is to really zero in on the cost of living, because Mark, the rent is too damn high, cost of groceries is too high, and it's too expensive to live. And if politics can't deliver on that, then people really have no point. There's no reason for them to vote, to participate, to be part of it. And that's what they're looking for. They're looking for politicians that are responsive to how they're feeling. And what that means for Democrats in that big tent, and this is a challenge, is that no, Democrats aren't going to be talking about trans rights. No, they're not going to be talking about, you know, more parochial or more narrow interests that we all care about. Climate change, another one, right? No, they're not going to be talking about climate change, because nobody that is suffering economic hardship cares about what's going to happen in 50 years or 25 years if they can't buy groceries for their family today. That's where we as a coalition need to be patient. We know that Democrats are going to be friendly on those issues. We know they are. They don't need to be talking about it when the vast majority of voters are concerned about buying groceries, being able to afford to take care of their families. And that's got to be our singular laser focus message moving into 2024 or 2026. And I think it's going to be, because it's such an obvious winner. And Mark, I can't overstate just how dramatic the Democratic victories were yesterday. Polling had the New Jersey governor's race, you know, between 1 and 5 points. Quinnipiac was the outlier, saying that Mikey Sherrill was going to win by 10 points. She won by 13. Wasn't even close. She right. gained in every single county in the state, including red counties. She reversed what all of Donald Trump's gains in New Jersey. Latino districts that had swung heavily towards Trump last year swung just as heavily back, and we're back to square one. And that has consequences that we can talk about later, what that shift in the Latino vote means. But we saw the House of the Virginia, the House of Delegates in Virginia, that had a 3-vote Democratic majority, now had, we had 13 votes swing. Now we have a supermajority in that chamber. Republicans held that chamber in 2023. So in the span of 2 years, Democrats have reversed a Republican majority into a Democratic supermajority. 13 of those seats flipped on Tuesday. We saw Democrats easily win two statewide elections in Georgia.
That's right.
By over 60%.
And that was the Public Service Commission, right?
Yeah. And those were all about lowering prices, energy prices. That's what that was all about.
But here's a lesson, y'all. We don't think about Public Service Commission stuff. These little things matter. Go ahead. That's all I want people to understand. I mean, that's, people are celebrating. I don't know when people have, I've heard national celebrations over Public Service Commission seats. That's a good thing. All right.
Absolutely.
You call me every day. I'm sure you get a call every day from somebody saying, hey, I want to run for Senate. No, you can't. Don't nobody know you. Run for Public Service Commission. Okay, good. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. And you know, when we started talking, what, a decade ago, we used to complain that the only time Democrats and liberals really tuned in for politics was presidential.
That's right.
Right. Like I remember like being so frustrated at the Bernie crowd because I'm like, there's more than Bernie. There's a whole ballot. There's elections that matter up and down the ballot. Can we turn out? Can we pay attention to judicial races, to attorney general races, to Secretary of State raises, to Public Utilities Commission? I mean, the Democrats promised to freeze rates as soon as they took office. That's an easy promise to keep. That one's an easy one. So in Pennsylvania, we had three Supreme Court justice races statewide. Republicans targeted them heavily because right now Democrats have a majority on that court. We won all three fairly easily. Down the line, I mean, the California redistricting ballot initiative, one with over, you know, 2/3 majority. I mean, down the line, it was a clear repudiation. And what's really amazing, Mark, is that Trump did not claim there was fraud. He did not claim. He blamed the loss. You want to hear what he blamed the loss on?
What?
He wasn't on the ballot, number one. And number two, the shutdown. So, Mark, he's not on the ballot next year.
Right.
He just told his party that he cannot protect them.
Right, right.
So
right.
Why are they going to stick with him? He cannot protect them, number one. Number two, the shutdown, yeah, it's killing Republicans. It's showing voters that Republicans cannot govern, that they cannot be trusted with the reins of power. So this is only going to get worse. I mean, inflation's rising. Right now, there is a Washington Post story this morning saying that layoffs are now at a recession level. Over a million people have lost their jobs this year. None of that is changing. Nothing that Trump is doing is changing that. In fact, everything he's doing, this is the crazy part about it all. Everything he's doing is making that worse because by mass deportations, he's making the cost of groceries more expensive.
Right.
And by tariffs, he's making literally everything more expensive. Yeah. Everything he's doing, he's making the situation worse. You know who is actually benefiting? The stock market. And you know what the irony is, Mark? This, we've been talking about it, right? Trump won those making under 50,000. Democrats won those making over 50,000. And when you look at 100,000 as a cutoff, it's even more dramatic. The people most benefiting from Trump's policies right now are actually wealthier liberals.
Right.
And his voters. So, and I'm going to write about this today. In New Jersey and in Virginia, those income statistics, they flipped again. So Democrats overwhelmingly won those making under 50,000.
Mm.
They had lost those.
Got them back.
I think people are realizing, oh yeah, no, Republicans... they're not good for us. But that's just step one. Step two is Democrats have to message very clearly, because you know what? Economics matters to everybody. Mm-hmm. Climate change might be your big issue. Trans rights might be somebody else's big issue. For me, immigration's the big issue. In the end, everybody's affected by economics. And that's what the vast majority of people are gonna vote for. And we saw that with Mamdani. We saw that with Donald Trump until he lost focus. And I think we saw it with every Democratic victory up and down the ballot this year was really, really focused on economics and cost of living. And we got to be better about both running on that and then delivering on that.
You mentioned the shift in the Latino, electorate. That was real, right?
It was ginormous, Mark. There was a precinct I'm gonna look this up because it's too good. There was a precinct in Paterson, New Jersey. Paterson, New Jersey is heavily Latino, and this precinct is particularly Latino. It's a Latino, you know, I think it's almost entirely Latino, this precinct. It swung 78 points in 2024. So get this. In 2020, Biden won 89% to 11% Trump. In 2024, Trump won 50% of that vote. Harris got 49.7. So that was a 78-point swing.
Wow.
On Tuesday, Mikey Sherrill got 88% to Cetrelli, 12%. So it swung right back. And we've seen that in maybe not as dramatic as that particularly district precinct, but here, let me pull this up. In Hudson, which is 41% Latino, Murphy, who is the current Democratic governor, in 2021 won by 48 points. In 2024, Harris only won it by 28 points. That's a 20 point shift towards Trump. Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday, Mikey won it by 50. So even better than Murphy had won it in 2021. So everybody, I think what it looks like is kind of like a one-term flirtation where they kind of like make googly eyes at each other and they batted their eyes and maybe they held hands. And then these Democrat Latinos were like, ew, like this guy's a creep. He freaking hates my people. Right. And it's swinging heavily back. And this matters huge because, you know, the redistricting in Texas, right, where Republicans did their mid-decade redistricting. Four of those seats are majority Hispanic districts. They're majority Latino districts, mostly down in the border area. Those are law and order Latinos, and that's why they've been drawn towards the GOP in recent cycles. The Republicans have assumed that those Latino voters are staying with them. And so they completely redo the map in a way that is designed to lock in these, like, you know, Latino voters as Republicans and those as Republican districts. If what we're seeing in the rest of the nation, if that carries out in Texas next year, that may actually backfire disastrously on the Republicans. Those districts can easily swing Democratic if these trends hold. And while the California redistricting, those aren't going anywhere. Those are going to be, those are solidly Democratic districts. So immediately after Tuesday, Kansas shelved their efforts to redistrict. They're realizing that when you redistrict, you're making the existing Republican seats more, less red, right? More blue, because you have to take those Republican voters and put them in these new districts to create new Republican districts. So you're diluting your incumbents. Kansas looked at the results on Tuesday night and they said, we're out. We're not going to endanger more of our Republicans. And it's going to be interesting because you're having conversations in both Indiana and in Florida about redistricting. And I would not be surprised if both those states at this point decide to pass. Because if you're seeing this kind of shift in the vote, if this carries out next year, and Mark, my prediction right now is that it's going to be even more, the shift is going to be even bigger because the economy is just going to get worse and worse and worse. And people are going to start really, really getting hit. I mean, losing SNAP benefits, that disproportionately hurts rural voters, which are Republicans.
Right.
The loss of everything rural. In just not even the shutdown and just Trump's budget cuts are going to impact rural America. The loss of healthcare. If you look at both Virginia and New Jersey in the exit polls, the top two issues were the economy and healthcare. And in both states, they asked about taxes. And New Jersey has they have the highest taxes in the nation. And it was like 13% thought taxes were the biggest issue. on crime, it was like 3%. Immigration, it was like 6%. And yeah, Republicans won those, but they're a tiny, tiny minority of the electorate, right? Most people are fixated on healthcare and economy. And Mark, I think they're the same thing, right? It's called cost of living. That's what those two categories are all about. Mm-hmm. And Democrats right now are absolutely dominating those. And again, as we talk about big tent party, we can't be locked, you know, oh, this candidate doesn't talk enough about transition surgery for prison inmates. Like, no, they're not going to talk about that. And it would be political malpractice to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to be talking about the economy and making life cheaper and easier, improving people's lives.
Yeah. That's what's most important. In other areas of victory, Marcos alluded to the Public Service Commission in Georgia, Alicia Johnson and Peter Hubbard. Alicia, actually the first African-American woman to serve in a statewide elective executive office in Georgia. This is the first time Democrats have won a non-federal statewide office in Georgia in 20 years, a non-federal statewide office. And again, it's all about the rent is too damn high. So is the electric bill. Georgia power bills have increased 6 times, y'all, since 2023. First black woman elected in the city of Conyers, Georgia. Swainsboro, Metair, Georgia. Andre Dickens won re-election, but we got problems with Andre because of Cop City. Mississippi was forced to draw their new districts after flagrant violations of the Voting Rights Act. Democrats broke the Republican supermajority in both houses of the Mississippi legislature. That's huge. That wasn't in the plan. That wasn't on the bingo card. And we thought that was just going to be built in. So again, we got to go back to 50 states, y'all. Mississippi can be in play. Marcos and I have been talking about that. We first talked about Georgia being in play, and we were right. It came in play. We can put Mississippi in play, and maybe one of these days, even Texas. 90% of African-American voters supported Abigail Spanberger in Virginia. Kamala Harris got 84% of black voters in 2024. And this is important. Jay Jones also won that race for attorney general in Virginia. No point, Marcos, in having a Democratic governor and a right-wing attorney general. Because what are we now seeing? We're seeing that a lot of these cases, including the SNAP cases, were brought by Democratic attorneys general. And so things have kind of turned on their heads, where we're going to have to rely on Democrats in the states where Republicans are usually the ones that are tenthers. Not saying Democrats are becoming tenthers, but we got to work every angle of this. So that's good news. Aiken, South Carolina, first black city council member elected, first black mayors in Albany and Syracuse here in New York. The support for Mom Donnie, black voters voted for Cuomo because of the father. And nobody knew Mom Donnie, but that completely flipped Tuesday night. So that's good news as well. Mary Sheffield, first black woman, mayor of Detroit. 91% of black voters voted in New Jersey for Mikey Sherrill. All right. And that says a lot because there was a black candidate, the venerable Raz Baraka, in the primary against Mikey Sherrill. And Mikey probably got more votes. Raz lost that primary, the mayor of Newark. And still 91% of black voters turned out for Mikey Sherrill. So people are getting it and cutting through the foolishness. And then, of course, in your state, Prop 50 won resoundingly. And that's meaningful as well.
I mean, there was literally not a single shred of bad news for Democrats.
Right.
Not
right.
One. Nothing that was contested, we lost. And like you said, like those Mississippi races, we won stuff that weren't even on the map. We didn't even think they were like a thing that was possible.
Right.
And it got swept up. That's what a wave looks like. And the only downside to Tuesday was that it wasn't next year Tuesday because we'd have control of the House and the Senate right now. And at this point, again, I think it's going to be, maybe it's for the best, because next year, I think it's going to be even better, the climate. Trump is incapable. You know, it's really crazy, Mark. Trump was reported, he didn't tweet this, but apparently behind closed doors, it was reported that he said that the problem Republicans had is that they weren't messaging their economic victories well enough. So just very much, remember, you know, with Biden, we talked about that, right? There were economic victories. Trump doesn't have any economic victories. I mean, the stock market's doing great. Okay, but great. Like those, but the problem he's having and the problem that Joe Biden had, it's the exact same problem, is that there's no way to message people to tell them that the economy is well when they're suffering. Because they're going to the grocery store and they have to take stuff out of their baskets because they can't afford it, because something went up in price and now they can't afford to buy orange juice or whatever. Trump can be like, prices are down. You cannot propagandize the state of the economy. Right. And this is the challenge that they had. It was a challenge that Biden had, because the economy was better than in the rest of the world. But what do people care that inflation's lower here than it is in Germany? Like nobody who's actually suffering from inflation is going to be like, well, thank God we're not Germany. No, they're going to be like, I can't afford stuff. And so now you have Trump really trying to rewrite his, you know, and I've written about this, right? He'll tweet things like, good news, everybody, prices are down, inflation's down. And all the comments to him are universally like, sir, you need to come to Indiana because prices here are actually higher, sir. And they all like treat like he's like the God King, right? Like, sir, but all of it universally, not a single person says like, good job, you know, Mr. President, for taming inflation. No, they're all kind of like, they all think that he's getting bad information. Like, it's not that Trump is lying, is that his advisors are giving him bad information. But that just sort of points to the fact that even his strongest, most rabid supporters can't sit there and go and play along with the fiction that the economy is better for them. So this is why I think it's important. I mean, Democrats should literally promise to send people checks. Like, literally promise to send people checks. And you pay, like, Elon Musk, he's asking for a $1 trillion compensation package from Tesla. $1 trillion. You know what? He can afford to pay to send a check to people. And then when that check happens, it ain't going to happen, obviously, with Trump as president, but run on that. And whoever the next president is, have that Democratic president sign those checks. And it can be monthly checks, help to offset the cost of living. Promise that. And then tax the freaking billionaires. Do a wealth tax. You don't think that shit's going to be popular? It's going to be popular.
Yeah, no, that has to happen. Democrats need to wake up and take advantage of that. And don't get me wrong, we have this diversity in this party, but some of this, you know, let's just not do that and let's do that. No, it's not socialist to put your name on a check.
No, it's not socialist.
I mean, everybody's scared of socialism.
And let people go, okay, yeah, socialism is you get a government check. You really want to vote against your government check? And some people might, but I bet you a lot of people will actually, because they're drowning. And if you say, yeah, inflation's up, but we're going to actually help you pay for your groceries, that's a winner. And that's what we need to run on. And you know what? That's what government exists to do. It exists to make people's lives better. And the amount of wealth concentrated in the top echelon of people, that 1% of the 1%. I mean, we're beyond Gilded Age levels at this point. That wealth concentration at the top, redistribute that stuff down. And if that's what socialism is, let people know that's exactly what socialism is. Elon Musk can help pay for your groceries.
You're right. So this is, and again, folks, we've got Talk It Up. I mean, we celebrate, but y'all, this, you know how we are, y'all. Oh, look what we did last year. No, we got to do it. This has got to be 365. This is what we can do when we understand politics. I hate to say it, paying bills and politics are 365 days a year.
Yep.
And not enough has been done to link the two. We just keep talking about kitchen table. I mean, most folks don't even have time to sit down at no kitchen table no more. Most households have family members who are like ships in the night. Gone. See, gone is the, when you say kitchen table, you're still in that Republican ideal, leave it to Beaver kind of atmosphere where folks sit down at the same time every night at the dinner table and wake up everyone and sit down at the same time at the breakfast table. Have you seen those Nazi propaganda posters that the Department of Labor has put out?
Yes, they're literally Nazi posters. Literally. Yes.
So that's the example. But that's not real. That's not how people are living. So we've got to, when we're struggling to pay these bills, and folks, we have to get control of that because bills keep going up. All these streaming services, I get a notice today, your bill's going up. Why? Who told you could raise my bill? You know, and that happens every day in all these situations. We've got to stand up against it. And the only way we do that is by remaining involved and voting, even in those down. That Public Service Commission piece in Georgia is a big deal. Before we go, there are rumors. My phone is blowing up. No. The Democrats are getting ready to cave on the shutdown. And that's just a rumor now, but I'm getting it from some pretty credible sources. Because that's the other thing about some of those people on Capitol Hill. They like bad refrigerators. They can't hold nothing. So folks are running their mouths. We need to cut a deal. We need to let the healthcare subsidies go. Before I say that, Chuck Schumer ought to be ashamed. See, that's an example. We don't need that in the tent no more. If we're going to talk about this, kicking people off the island out the tent, Chuck Schumer would not acknowledge Zoran Mamdani. Chuck, the tide has turned. All right.
And you I don't even know why. Like, he's a Democratic nominee. That's it. That's what the Democratic voters chose for.
Israel. That's all it is. It's Israel. Completely. And as if Chuck's constituency ain't going to vote him out for that. So I don't know what he's scared of.
No, yeah, exactly.
And the tide has turned. This is the first time in history. This is the most Jewish state in the Union. Jews in America have shifted. Netanyahu is poison to the state of Israel. And he has caused many Jews, including many Jews in Israel, amen, to shift away from unconditional support for Zionism or Zionism like whatever degree of Zionism you're into. Folk are moving away from that, right? I mean, they see this for what it is. You know, there's some humanity that has come about here. Just bombing and killing folk, civilians and children, not negotiating hostages in early on. So Chuck, get it together. But anyway, what do you think? Should Democrats continue to hold this line, Affordable Care Act subsidies? It's interesting, John Thune, the Republican majority leader in the Senate, he don't want to nuke the filibuster either. That's the thing about the Senate. Senators know, they know what it, every senator knows what it feels like to be in a minority. And nobody wants to go back to that. Now, we had a chance to do it. We didn't do it. We should. Somebody should, but he's not going to do it. What do you think about Democrats caving?
I mean, I'm literally rooting for Donald Trump's effort to nuke the filibuster. Because we've talked about filibuster, the Senate is already wholly unrepresentative of our nation, right? It benefits states like Wyoming and the Dakotas at the expense of states like California and New York. And so it is incredibly difficult for us to get even a majority of there. Now you had the supermajority and nothing happens. Like it actually hurts us more than it hurts them. And for whatever reason, they're afraid to nuke the filibuster. That's what's going to make it impossible for us to do DC statehood and Puerto Rico statehood and voting rights reform and all those things. We need to get rid of the filibuster. So I'm rooting for Trump to get that to happen. And Trump is right. I mean, right now, Republicans are being blamed for the shutdown. They can open up government today. They just need to nuke the filibuster. They got the votes. They literally have the votes. So that said, I mean, well, the other piece that is kind of an interesting dynamic, say the Democrats win, right? And they keep the subsidies and the government reopens. Are they going to get credit for defending people's ACA subsidies? Mm-hmm. Well, they're not going to get credit for it, right? I mean, I would give odds are, I would say there's an 80% chance that Donald Trump writes a tweet saying that he protected the ACA subsidies and his people will believe it. So there's not a lot of upside to winning the battle, but it does mean that they're standing for something, right? It does mean that they get the message that they're for healthcare. And the votes on Tuesday really showed that anybody who's concerned about healthcare costs overwhelmingly voted for the Democrats. And they should hold the ground because they don't have the power right now. Republicans have the power to do everything. They either cave on the ACA subsidies or they get rid of the filibuster. They can open up the government today. And as long as Democrats have that vote, that power, yeah, they should wield it. And no, you can't trust Trump. I mean, he's been gutting agencies that were authorized by Congress. Like, how do you trust him to keep any deal? Right. He does whatever he wants. He doesn't even listen to the courts.
Right.
So there is really zero upside right now. Now, I will say that the public sector unions, government worker unions, they're putting a lot of pressure on Democrats right now to reopen because their members are getting. And well, so not, it's actually
not plural. One of them.
Why not? So some of that pressure is
some
coming.
Some of the unions are mad at that one union, by the way.
Are they? Okay. Yeah, I don't know the internal politics. But any pressure right now may be coming from the inside because externally, Democrats just won the election big time. Trump blamed the shutdown as a reason Republicans lost. So why would you give him a lifeline now? So I hope those rumors aren't true or it's just one person being an a-hole. I mean, we know Fetterman is going to vote for opening the government, but they're winning the battle. And we just saw on Tuesday, they won ginormous because Democrats are finally seen as somebody who's fighting against pushing back against Trump. Of course, you don't cave.
After a victory like Tuesday, why would you cave?
Yeah.
But you know, we I love the big tent, but maybe some folk, maybe the milk. The tent, do we have to have, can we have everybody in the tent but the milquetoast people? Is
well,
that okay?
You know what, Mark? Do we need to have Schumer in charge? That's the question. Like, he can be senator from New York. Nobody cares. Does right. he actually have to be in charge?
No.
And he had his moment a few decades ago. It's time for new.
He did? Leadership. I don't know what that was. What was that moment? I missed that moment.
No, I'm being generous. When we won the Senate in 2018 No, it was 2008 during Bush's first term. That was a big victory, and we won states like Montana, and we won Virginia when Virginia was still a red to purple state. He helped guide us to a Senate majority in 2008. I think it was 8. But you know what? It's time. I'd say this: I'm glad Nancy Pelosi is retiring. Like, we need. There needs to be a generational shift in our party. And we have so many geriatric Democrats who had their moments decades ago. It's time to move on. Why would you create a bottleneck, a leadership bottleneck in the party? Move on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad Pelosi, and I have all the respect for her and what she accomplished and how historic of a figure she is. There comes a point where it's time to move on.
Yeah, yeah. That is the news of the hour.
And I'm seeing that, you know, with rumors of Ayanna Pressley running for Senate against Ed Markey. I hope she does.
Yeah.
Time to move on.
Nancy Pelosi stepping down, folks. That is the news. The headline in the New York Times 2 hours ago, New York Times, as Mamdani surges ahead, Schumer risks finding himself left behind. It's poignant. That headline is running the same day Nancy Pelosi is now not running for re-election. Maybe Chuck Schumer needs to take heed.
And Mark, just take, I got to run here in a sec, but just imagine somebody like Mamdani who like has driven youth vote to record levels. People are excited. They're dancing about it. He brings all this energy. Even if you disagree policy-wise on certain things, why not use that as a tool to learn from, embrace it, like bring some of that energy in the party? You can even say we may disagree on this issue, but we're at a temper. You can. It's not hard, Mark. It's not hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm excited about that. Like, I'm excited about that energy that he's bringing to the party. And we saw that energy. And, you know, Republicans are going to try to turn him into a boogeyman. They ain't going to succeed.
Yeah, yeah. Marcos Melitzis, DailyCoast.com. Folks, follow all the news coverage there. Thank you for joining us on this election recap, Thursday Coast edition. Marcos, is Nancy, is she's not your congressperson?
No, she's not.
Yes, Nancy Pelosi is stepping down. Chuck Schumer, you got to do something, man. Big wins. Let's stay focused. Let's keep working. Let's not pull up off the, don't go into cruise control. We do that.
I think we're good next year. I think we're good the next 2 years. People know what's at stake, and it's stopping Trump.
Thanks, Marcos.
Thanks. Have a great one. See you next week.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.